Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. Back in crystal clear sound. Thank you, first of all, to anyone who stuck it out last week. That was rough. I know I sound like I was trapped in a phone booth at the bottom of the ocean. You guys are the real MVPs. Joined today by a guest I've long wanted to have on the podcast. He is a 12-year NFL vet, two-time Super Bowl winner. You can see him talking about the NFL on ESPN, just about every show, but Get Up, First Take. Honestly, none of that really compares to his greatest skill, which he has the best reaction gifs on the internet. It's Damian Woody, everybody.
What's
Damian,
up, Mina?
How do you do it? Like, where do you save these gifts? Like, you must have gotten a lot of praise for this, right? This isn't the first time you're hearing what a gif master you are.
Yeah, listen, it's everyone on Twitter always hits me up and said, "Dude, is that a skill set that you have? Like, this is something crazy how you're able to come up with these gifts at the drop of a dime." And I don't know, man. I don't know. It is a gift because I can't explain it, Mina.
You've got a gift for gifts. When you were in the NFL, you know, just blocking dudes, did you ever think someday I will be appreciated for finding images on the internet and sending them to people?
No, that was the furthest thing from my mind. You know, the fact that actually I even have my own gift now, which I find fascinating, especially my daughters.
Really?
Yeah. You know, I'm pretty cool with the school age kids now because they have my own gift.
What is the gif of you? Is it like a happy gif or an angry one?
Well, it has me looking kind of, it has me doing this facial expression like, come on, dog, like really? So that's
that's
one,
a really good one.
That's a really good one. Then another one, I'm just kind of like pointing angrily at someone, which is, that's not my deal because I'm like this lovable teddy bear type of dude. And then the last one is just real corporate where I'm just like swipe up. So, yeah.
You are very lovable and I would say, maybe like, Simon, I said you were the greatest gift person in ESPN, that's true, but you're also like simultaneously the most huggable, can I say that? The person you'd want to hug from the most, but also the person whose hands you don't want to catch at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think you're right on both fronts there, Mina. You know, people always look at me on TV, it's like, oh, I just want to squeeze you. I'm like, but you haven't seen the dark side. I'm like, you get on the other side, it might be a different story. So let's not go there.
I think it's a good combination of skills. I don't think I have either of those qualities, to be honest. Are you going to huggable at least? Can I say huggable?
The hands? Yeah. No, we're going to hug this out throughout this whole podcast.
I'm not really a hugger in a surprise to no one who's listening to this. I've been told every photo of me, I do the hover hands kind of, which, you know, like the like, ooh, are we doing this? Okay, it's happening.
Is that weird?
It is weird, but I'm weird. Okay. And we're going to keep it weird today, but we're also going to talk about, obviously, the divisional round matchups. I feel like I was sold a false bill of goods on Wild Card Weekend. I was like, oh, these games are going to be awesome. And of course they weren't because that's how things happen in the NFL. But I truly think, divisional round is my favorite round, Damian, because, you know, the Wild Card round, you always end up with a few crappy games, but this, you're starting to weed out some of the bad teams. And then in the divisional round, I think we've got some of the better offenses. So ideally we'll see more scoring. But before we get to those games, we're going to talk about all four. I just got to get something off my chest. He knows where this is going.
Oh, I just want to spend,
and I feel like you're with me, but hear me out and then you can weigh in. I just, look, this is the last time I'm going to talk about the Seahawks for a minute, but I just like to spend a couple of minutes airing out my grievances. Now, after the loss to Dallas last weekend, I tweeted through my pain. I said, well, you know, the defense wasn't good enough. The offensive line struggled. But handcuffing Russell Wilson by stubbornly adhering to a running game that was as ineffective as a newborn puppy trying to do the backstroke through a vat of Jell-O was just stupid. Ridiculous. Now, this season surpassed my expectation. I predicted 8-8. I did not see the playoffs coming. And you could say, well, you know, running all season, that was their identity. To which I would say, sure. And it worked at times. And it probably helped the offensive line at times. And you could have argued that they should have run less during the season. But that's not the problem here. The problem is football is a sport where you play the team in front of you. And this team, the Dallas Cowboys, they were blowing the Seattle run game to smithereens, which is not surprising because they had one of the best run defenses in the NFL, fifth against the run, 16th versus the pass, and it showed on Saturday. Seattle's running backs ran the ball 21 times for 59 yards. That's less than 3 yards per attempt. And if you take away the one Rashard Penny run, it's even worse. On set of downs where they went run, run pass. They converted 1 out of 6 third downs. Meanwhile, when they let their all-world quarterback throw the damn ball, they averaged the highest expected points added per passing attempts of any team in the NFL this weekend. They were destroying Dallas on play action, which is not surprising because Dallas has been bad versus play action all year. Russell Wilson was 9 for 10 for 111 yards and 11.1 yards per attempt on play action. Now, different teams are built different ways. Not everyone's a Chiefs. Not everyone has to do the same things, you know, the exact same way. But at a certain point, if you're in a single elimination game, that's not identity. It's banging your head into the damn wall. That's it.
Wow. Can I digest that for a second? Like,
I'm still working through this.
Are you still? Oh, so there's more.
No, emotionally. There's no more, but I'm already spent, man.
Well, I have to give you an applause because that was wonderful. I'm sitting there right along with you, Mina. I mean, a lot of people out there don't know. I mean, we communicate during games, and obviously you have a particular interest with the Seahawks, but I'm tweeting during the game, the hell is Brian Schottenheimer doing? Okay. Yes, I know. I understand you were number one in the league in rushing the football as a unit. But again, like you said, this is a playoffs. You have to adjust accordingly. Why keep running your head, banging your head against a brick wall? That's what Dallas does best. And when you have Russell Wilson as your quarterback, maybe you want to try throwing the ball, especially on first down. When first down is usually like the best down. It's usually like the best down to make a completion or get a chunk play. So it just really baffled me watching that whole Seattle game plan just fizzle out.
Yeah, and like we'll talk about the Cowboys later when we get to that game. You know, they didn't have this amazing offensive game plan either.
No.
The difference is their quarterback is Dak Prescott.
Correct.
They do not have Russell Wilson.
That is correct.
I'm glad you agree with me. We're already off on a great foot. I promise you're going to talk more and I'm going to talk less going forward. But let's start with the first game. All right, so yet again, Jay Cutler took the day off, as he is wont to do, so I unfortunately have been called into action.
Colts at Chiefs.
So upsetting. I was extremely impressed by the Colts this weekend. Actually, you know, let's start here. We just railed on, you know, Schottenheimer and Carroll, but I think there was a lot of bad coaching this weekend. One guy who really coached his pants off, we kept his pants on, but he coached incredibly, was Frank Reich. What were you struck by, you know, the Colts game plan going into wildcard weekend, and how do you think it'll serve them going forward?
Yeah, Frank Reich has been unbelievable, and it just seems like in a game of chess, he was just one step ahead of Bill O'Brien that whole time. The Colts they're a fascinating team. I mean, think about it. This is a team that no one had penciling being in this position, but they're a team that's won 10 out of 11 games heading to the postseason. The offensive line has just been phenomenal for Andrew Luck. I think he's been sacked the least amount of times in the National Football League at 18. They're able to run the football. But I think the biggest thing when I watch the Colts is their defense. When was the last time we equated the Indianapolis Colts with defense? It hasn't happened in a long, long time. And since week 7, they had the number one scoring defense in the league. And I think when we look at this matchup with the Kansas City Chiefs, I think that's going to be a good matchup because the way that Indianapolis plays defense, they're not a team that's going to give up a bunch of, big chunk plays. And that's what Kansas City specializes in. You know, I think that on average, when they score, it's in 5 plays. I mean, that is lightning fast. You're scoring a touchdown in 5 plays per drive. So my question would, the thing I'm really interested in seeing is, can Patrick Mahomes and that offense be patient enough to put together a scoring drive? Can they go 11 plays? You know, can they do that? That's something that they haven't really been accustomed to doing throughout the year.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. And let's stay on that side of the ball, the Kansas City offense versus the Colts defense, because I agree. The Colts defense has surpassed all expectations. If you would look at that depth chart going into this season, I mean, most names were unrecognizable to the average NFL fan. And really what, you know, Reich and Matt Eberflus also deserves a ton of credit for what they've done on that side of the ball. Going into the Texans game, Damian, my prescription for Bill O'Brien was, you got to throw because this Colts defense is built to stop the run. And they did that. They held the Texans' backs to 29 yards, which is impressive. But they also, you know, were able to blanket DeAndre Hopkins and company. Now, Hopkins was injured, right? And Watson was kind of off all game, in part because of the pass rush, which was pretty impressive. But Patrick Mahomes and that Kansas City offense is a very different animal.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
They're, you know, I mean, they'll kill you with screens. They'll kill you down the field. Like, I guess, how do you stop Mahomes? Because this, we've been talking about this all season. Like, he doesn't really have a weakness.
Yeah. That's a great question.
Like, easy question. How do you stop Patrick Mahomes?
I know. If it was so easy, everyone would be able to do it. But, you know, the one thing when you watch Patrick Mahomes, a lot of people always reference Favre, but he doesn't have a lot of Favre bad tendencies. Like Favre Favre will make, you know, two or three bad plays, two or three great plays, but he will also throw a couple of interceptions along the way. Whereas Patrick Mahomes makes all the spectacular plays. He makes the simple plays, and does it without without all the interceptions to go along with it. So, this is going to be a huge challenge for the Indianapolis Colts. But I think the first thing you got to do if you're the Colts, you got to make the Kansas City Chiefs one dimensional. That's where everything starts fundamentally when you're playing defense. You got to make the opposition one dimensional. So first and foremost, take away the run. Once you take away the run, now you can focus on Patrick Mahomes in that pass game, which is easier said than done. But if you don't have to worry about the run, you know, that's where scheme can help you out. And again, the way the Indianapolis Colts play defense, they play that cover two, which is in theory designed to take away those huge chunk plays to the Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce down the seams. If they can do that, then they got a really good shot on defense to kind of slow down. I don't think they won't stop them, but slow them down enough to win that football game.
I love that you pointed out that Patrick Mahomes does the easy pass as well, the short, because I think it sounds so simple, right? But when we think of him, we do think of, you know, him extending plays, making these incredible passes, ungodly passes outside the pocket and sandlotting a little bit. But when he gets into a rhythm, he is unstoppable. Okay. When Mahomes gets the ball out in less than 2.5 seconds, he completes 80% of his passes, 27 touchdowns to one interception. You cannot let that happen with him. Again, this is all very easier said than done, but you know, you talked about making them one dimensional. The Colts are built to stop the run game with Leonard and those linebackers. So again, it feels so stupid to even say, okay, well, all you have to do is stop the run and not let him get in. Because, like, yeah, of course, like, if a defense could do that, they could. That's what they have to do to stop Mahomes. But I do think those are sort of the priorities for this defense. And this defense, which, Damian, is much better than the Chiefs' defense, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. It's night and day. Again, like I said, since week 7, you know, everyone talks about the Chicago Bears' defense and the Baltimore Ravens defense, and rightfully so, but the Indianapolis Colts had the number one scoring defense since week 7. Okay, they fly under the radar, but they're a huge reason as to why the Indianapolis Colts have won 10 out of 11 games, because this may be the most well-rounded team in the playoffs. And I know the chart, we're going to get into the Chargers as well, but
when you're
playing as well as the Colts are on both sides of the football right now, you're going to have a legitimate shot to run the table.
Well, no one would call the Chiefs well-rounded, but how much of a liability is the defense? You can look at the statistics, but I think worst in passing efficiency, or pardon me, rushing efficiency. Pass, when you look at the underlying pass numbers, they're a little bit better, but that's largely because of the pass rush. Do you think they're too, like, will they be a limiting factor to this team?
I don't know if we've seen, you know, a team that's built like the Kansas City Chiefs run the table, go all the way. And I think that could ultimately be their downfall. Their margin for error is actually a lot slimmer than in Indianapolis Colts, because when you look at Indianapolis, when was the last time Andrew Luck had a defense like this? I mean, Andrew Luck was taking teams to the playoffs and to the AFC championship games with a team that had nothing around them outside of him. Now he actually has, you know, parts on both sides of the ball. Kansas City Chiefs, they got Patrick Mahomes, they got Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, you know, offensive line. But when your team, when your defense is giving it up on the other side to the opposition, it puts a lot of stress on your offense to go out there and score on every possession. So this, I think that's going to present a part, that's going to present a problem for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah. So I watched a little bit of the last game against Oakland, and huge grain of salt. It was Oakland, right?
Right.
But the defense, they did look significantly better to me. They've looked better as the season has gone by, and volume stats on this defense are really misleading, because when you are up by a zillion points, yes, other teams will put up passing yards
right.
on you, and yes, but the run defense has been just terrible. Horrible. Now, in this Raiders game, Damian, I did notice, the Chiefs linebackers, Reggie Ragland from Buffalo and Anthony Hitchens, I don't know if it was that the scheme had been simplified or if that they were simply playing with more discipline, but they were much, much, much better than I had seen in previous weeks. My biggest concern is still there, but it's also that secondary, which gets so many penalties, and they're always deserved. Like, you know, when you, like, we hate penalties, but when I'm watching the Chiefs and they'll throw a flag, and my first reaction is like that annoyance, but then they show the replay and you're like, oh yeah, he really held or, you know, whatever.
Right.
That's always the case with these Chiefs cornerbacks. And, you know, they're really, really young, and I don't blame them for being in this position, but they are in this position. And I really think I could see Andrew Luck just completely lighting them on fire unless Dee Ford and Chris Jones have put forward an extra human effort.
Yeah, listen, we saw what the Indianapolis Colts offensive line did with Houston, with Jadeveon Clowney and J.J. Watt. They were literally just stonewalling those guys, okay? And for me, when I look at that matchup, if Chris Jones and Dee Ford and Justin Houston, if they don't get home, Andrew Luck is going to pick this secondary apart. And that, to me, I think that might be the biggest matchup in the game is that Colts offensive line, which has been playing phenomenally well, particularly down the stretch against this Kansas City Chiefs pass rush. Because that's the only way you can try to mask that the back end of that Chiefs defense is, you know, those guys, you know, Chris Jones, I think, has like 15 and a half sacks, and Dee Ford is having a really good year. And to go along with Justin Houston, if those guys can't get home, oof. Mina, this thing, it could be ugly for the Chiefs defense.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny. I watched that, the matchup in the Houston game with interest, because you're right, the offensive line completely owned them. Everybody was sharing that Quentin Nelson block.
Yeah, oh yeah.
But
oh yeah.
Really, you know, and he was great, but really jumped out at me was Braden Smith. He was a guard, and they've moved him to tackle.
Correct.
He owned J.J. Watt
that entire game.
They're good.
They are really good. They're well coached. Schematically, they do a lot of things to try to take away, you know, the opponent's best player. So Indianapolis is going to have a game plan for Chris Jones and Dee Ford, but that unit is playing really, really well. And if you get Andrew Luck that much time in the pocket, he's deadly. He's deadly. He's accurate, and he has weapons. He has, you know, Eric Ebron and T.Y. Hilton. He has other guys on the outside. So this bears watching, that matchup between the Chiefs defensive line and that Colts offensive line.
It's interesting, and just to wrap this up, as we go through all these matchups, how many of them actually the Colts have an advantage in, I think. But I just can't bet against Andy Reid after the bye. I just can't.
He's really good.
With that offense, I don't know. I mean, what about you? Who you got in this game?
I actually got the upset. I got the Colts. Andy Reid is phenomenal. I don't know if there's a coach better than Andy Reid. I don't know if there's a coach better than Andy Reid after a bye. He is phenomenal after a bye.
20-4.
20-4, which is unreal. But I also know that the Colts are on fire right now. They have momentum coming into the postseason. Coming off a big win against Houston Texans on the road, this team is very confident. They're young. Andrew Luck is playing great. I'm picking the Colts in this game.
It's bold. I like it. All right, let's move on to the next game.
Cowboys at Rams.
all right. So, Damian, before we talk about the Cowboys, and we will, I want to talk about the Rams, because we've been having this conversation over the last few weeks of the season, sort of what happened to this Rams offense, and then did they fix it in the last couple games against, you know, pretty inferior opponents. But basically what we saw from, I think, for about three or four game stretch, starting with the Detroit game, was all of these defenses sort of figuring out a combination of things. A few factors. One was that they seemed to have figured out the Rams play action passes, right? Which is, you saw these defenses that were no longer biting on the fakes, ignoring all of the pre-snaps motions, daring the Rams to run, sitting back in these soft zones, you know. So you saw that, coupled with the fact that the Rams' offensive line, I thought, was really, really leaving up a lot of pressure, which, by the way, you know, it's harder to not do that when you're doing these play action passes, because there's more time to get to the quarterback. So you saw all these things happening, and coupled with the fact, well, I guess it's the third thing, throupled with the fact that Jared Goff was really, really struggling, which I think had a lot to do with these two things. So let's start there. Are you still worried about the Rams offense, or do you think that they've fixed or addressed some of those problems?
I'm still worried, in particular with, you know, as they match up with the Dallas Cowboys. Here's what I will say. The Rams, their offense is predicated on play action. Todd Gurley, down the stretch, you know, he was kind of being bottled up down the stretch. It's hard to do play action when you're being bottled up in the running game. Teams aren't biting as much. And quite frankly, a lot of these defensive coordinators, they were playing a little bit off, a little bit softer, knowing that the Rams, they like those chunk plays in the passing game. So it'll be interesting to see. Now, the Dallas Cowboys, on the other hand, on defense, they actually give up a lot of plays in play action pass. So there's going to be opportunities for them, for the Rams to exploit that. But here's the caveat. Have the Rams fixed their issues up front with their offensive line? Because that Dallas Cowboys defensive line, they're good. They're really good. They're good at stopping the run, and they're good at getting after the quarterback. So, again, in this matchup, along with all the other matchups, everyone wants to talk about all the shiny toys and all those type of things, but the trenches is going to be where this game is going to be won and lost on both sides, from the Cowboys defense and the Rams offense, and on the flip side with Zeke Elliott running the football as well.
And that's what you saw, Damian, last year, right? When the Rams were upset by the Falcons in the playoffs.
Correct.
You know, I went back and watched the highlights from that game, because I was just kind of curious. You know, I remember they had sat some of their starters in the final week, and they came out flat. But really, the Falcons won because they made Jared Goff's life miserable and completely won, you know, at the line of scrimmage. He was just bothered on just about every one of his 45 pass attempts. And that Falcons defense was very flawed in the back, and it had a lot of weaknesses, but you could easily, I think, see the same thing happening against Dallas if they're able to win in the trenches, as we're just talking about. I am impressed by Dallas's defense. I don't think the Seattle game showed us that much, because Seattle's game plan, which I talked about earlier, was so one-dimensional. They're very good at stopping the run. They can get beat. You talked about how they're bad against play action passes. I think it's a really, really important point in this game. And I think Sean McVay is not going to turtle up like Pete Carroll and company did. But it definitely does feel like, you know, they are a team that is probably, I guess there's a bit of that same Falcons-like thing going on. Now, on the other side of the ball, the Rams defense, Damian, I think if we're talking about the Rams offense and how they kind of imploded and sort of got a little bit better at the end, but certainly aren't what they were at the beginning of the season in terms of perception, I think the Rams defense looked a lot better down the stretch. And I think the biggest factor in that was the return of Aqib Talib. Once he got back, they started playing more zone, and he just obviously helps them. You know, you don't see those kind of busted coverages they had in prior weeks and missed handoffs between the DBs. Since he returned in week 13, only two wide receivers have caught touchdowns against the Rams. That's a problem for Dallas.
That is a problem for Dallas. There's no question about it. But I'm going to tell you what else is a problem. I think the Rams give up 5.1 yards of rush. That is not what you're looking for, especially in the playoffs. And we know that the Dallas Cowboys, their identity lies in two areas. One, their defense. Dallas relies heavily on their defense. But I think more importantly is the running game. Everything with the Dallas Cowboys starts with Zeke Elliott. And during the season, most people lost their minds with Jason Garrett because it seemed like he got away from what makes Dallas good. Dallas is good when Zeke Elliott gets the ball. Good things happen to the Cowboys when you feed Zeke Elliott. And going against the Ram defense, and we all know about Aaron Donald, and he's probably going to win the Defensive Player of the Year. He's a great player. There's no question about that. But if you can't make a team one-dimensional, it's going to be hard for it's going to be hard to beat that team. And I haven't seen this year where the Rams just shut down a team's rushing attack. Again, they're giving up 5.1 yards per rush. And you're going up against Zeke Elliott and that Dallas Cowboys offensive line? That's going to be a problem. So I'm real interested to see that matchup. See if the Rams can do something about that.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how Wade Phillips, you know, it's been an up and down season for the Rams and on defense, and some of that has to do with injuries, some of that has to do with guys like Marcus Peters. Well, he was injured, but obviously he had a really tough stretch in the middle of season. Then again, I really think the return of Tlaib helped. But I've been critical. That linebacking group is not very good. And we know Wade Phillips likes to coach an attacking defense. And, you know, often part of the reason they're very, very successful at rushing the passer is they do sacrifice something in run defense at that. So I do think it's going to be a huge issue for them. And I think you're absolutely right to hone in on Zeke Elliott as the key. It's funny, like when Amari Cooper joined Damian, I feel like there was they saved the Cowboys offense. Well, no, Zeke Elliott is still by far the most important player on this Cowboys offense. I guess I'm still sticking with the Rams in this. They're favored, right? Yeah, they must be favored. Just because I have some faith in Sean. I do think that he turned around that offense a bit at the end of the year, and I think that they're going to give us something we haven't seen, right? I don't think it's going to be all season long. It was the same offensive formula for the Rams, you know, 11, using the same guys, play action, yada, yada. I really think there's going to be some surprises in this Rams offense. And I'm riding with them. I don't know. Are you picking another upset?
I am. I'm picking the Cowboys. I'm picking the Cowboys in this game.
Wild.
I am. I'm a wild man. I am picking the Cowboys in this game. First of all, I don't think there's not going to be a home field advantage. I think there's going to probably be more Cowboys fans than Rams fans there. So you can cancel that out. And two, the way you counter this Rams explosive offense, you got to grind the clock down. And I think that's what the Dallas Cowboys are going to do. They're going to grind the clock, time of possession. I think the biggest question is, outside of Zeke Elliott, the big question to me is Dak. Can Dak make enough plays in a passing game? I think that's going to be the biggest thing. You talked about when Aqib Talib came back, how much better the pass defense has been for the Los Angeles Rams. So the question is, can Dak make those plays that are presented to him when they happen? If he can,
yes,
then I feel like that's going to be the determining factor in the game.
And can he avoid turnovers, right? Not that he's particularly turnover prone, but this Rams defense, so much of their game is predicated, I think, on one or two big turnovers, one
Correct.
Or two big game-changing plays. They have such an attacking, aggressive style. And if they get those turnovers, I really think that the Rams can win this. And if they don't, I think it's going to be close.
Before we
move on.
I totally agree.
You with me?
Yes.
Okay. I love it when we agree. Before we move on to the final two games, as always, going to take a few quick questions.
Question. Question. Lenny, for your thoughts.
All right. As always, if you leave a review on iTunes, a nice review, by the way, and you leave a question in said nice review, please remember my mom reads them all, I will answer it. I'm deep in November, guys. I'm catching up. Someday. Philo TVYI asks, what's your favorite non-football podcast? I was just a guest on a show called All Fantasy Everything that I really love, that I've been listening to a lot lately. It's really, really long, but it's like a bunch of comedians and they draft things. We drafted members of a TV family. It's a lot of fun. CMJ05 asks, are the Broncos a coach away, or is Elway part of the problem? Damien, I want to hear your thoughts on this because we just got some news. The Broncos did hire Vic Fangio. So first of all, yes, Elway's part of the problem.
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
If you go through 100%, like if you pass on that many good quarterbacks and take that many bad quarterbacks over, yeah, that's Elway. But I love this Fangio hire.
So do I.
How about you?
You're into it. Yes, I love the hire. He's kind of like the antithesis of what's going on in National Football League right now. Everyone wants the young offensive mind, and Vic Fangio is a guy that's, you know, he's been one of the best defensive coordinators in the league for a long time, and he's finally getting his opportunity to be a head coach. When you think of the Denver Broncos, what are the Denver Broncos known for? Defense. So I love the hire for the Denver Broncos. Got to figure out the quarterback situation. But I think Vic Fangio has paid his dues, and it's his time now.
You know, I tweeted this. I think this is a huge concern for the Bears because,
oh yeah,
aside from the fact that I thought they were the most well-coached defense in the league last year, just remarkable.
Yes.
And great defenses are very hard to repeat. We see it with Seattle. We see it with Jacksonville. It's very hard to repeat elite defensive performance from year to year. And one of the Django blocks has just been removed. And I'd be very shook if I was them.
Mm-hmm.
C. Vitti asks, what are your plans for the podcast after the Super Bowl? Glad you asked. We're still going to do every week. You know, I love the draft. So we're going to do a lot of off-season things like this. Coaching hires, by the way, we'll do podcasts on all of these decisions, personnel, off-season stuff. But we'll also do, I'd like to do, you know, some weird podcasts, some interviews, that kind of thing. J2111, a lot of ones, three asks, believe it or not, he's not the first person to ask this question. What's Lenny's favorite treat? Lenny's my dog. Damien, I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've seen Lenny plenty of times.
Do you have a dog?
Do I? I have four dogs.
You have four dogs and seven kids.
Yeah. Oh, we, and two cats.
What are your dogs' names?
So we have Frisco. We have Maximus. We have, let me see. We have Ebony, and then we have Tiffany.
You have a dog named Tiffany?
Yes. That's my wife's dog.
I love.
Yeah, that's my wife's dog.
Oh, when dogs have really human names like Jared, Glenn, Steven. This is Steven. This is Daniel. It's just so weird. Wait, what kind of dog is Tiffany?
Tiffany is a Maltese.
Oh.
Yeah, she's
like,
it would
have been amazing
those,
if she was like a pit.
Yeah, I know. That would have been amazing. She's like, we only have like one big dog. All the other dogs are like tiny, tiny dogs.
Really?
Yeah.
Which one's your favorite?
Probably Tiffany.
This is hard. You don't have to.
Probably Tiffany.
Tiffany's your favorite.
Yeah, because she gravitates towards me more than anyone. Like, she sleeps under me, all those type of things.
I need to see a picture of you and Tiffany.
Oh, I'll make sure to post it.
To answer your question, Lenny, well, he eats everything but vegetables, like his mom. But his favorite, he gets those bark boxes, and he likes all of those bark box treats. Kate D from Minnesota is a Vikings fan, and now that Teddy's gone for good, she needs a new fantasy team name. So I have to go with the Vikings player who will be there for a while. I'll go with Daniil Hunter, and you could be like the Heart is a Lonely Hunter or something. All right, moving on to the next game.
Chargers at Patriots.
Okay, so Damien, I haven't looked at the lines, but I actually think this is the hardest game to pick. Do you agree or disagree? Let's start there.
Absolutely. I am struggling to pick this game. It is to me, it's that close of a game.
Yeah. You mentioned the Chargers are so balanced.
Well, think about this. They're playing. You have Tom Brady and Bill Belichick in Foxborough, and it's like pulling teeth right now to figure out who's going to win this game. To me, it speaks about the Chargers. They're the most balanced team in the league.
So well coached. Mm-hmm. Too. Let's talk about that Chargers defense and what they did in that Ravens game. Now, there's been a lot of pieces about this, and just to recap for those who, you know, watched the game or didn't watch the game but aren't caught up on it, I guess. Basically, Gus Bradley, former Seahawks, great. I always got to tie it back to the Seahawks, usually when I'm complaining. But what they did in this game against Lamar Jackson, they did a few things, okay? One, and this is a lot of ink has been spilled on this, they used 7 defensive backs pretty much the entire game, right? So I read somewhere that no team this year used 7 DBs more than 18 times.
It's rare. It's rare.
So, very rare. And the reason they did that was they felt that that was the best way to handle Lamar Jackson's rushing attack. Okay. Now, so they moved Jaleel Adeh, who's a safety who I've been criticizing a lot, to the Mike position. So basically, you know, they were using undersized linebackers. Now, when you hear that, you think, okay, well then why wasn't Gus Edwards able to eat and why weren't the Ravens able to get theirs? Well, another thing they did was they apparently knew the Ravens offensive line, all of their, couple things. One, they knew all of their tendencies. I think they could tell when they were running on just about every play. And two, Melvin Ingram was a friggin' wrecking ball mm-hmm. in this game. Best defensive performance I've seen this season. He was just slamming them inside, forcing the running backs to the outside on just about every play. So in my mind, Damian, it was a combination of all these factors. Let me ask you this. Is any of this relevant against the Patriots?
I mean, it is relevant because it just shows you the adjustments that the coaching staff, you know, is able to make. And when you play the Patriots, the number one thing is you never know what you're going to get. So you're going to have to adjust on the fly. So you got to give credit, got to give props to Anthony Lynn and his coaching staff for making the proper adjustments. Going into the game, that was one thing I said, that the Chargers are going to have a better game plan going up against that Ravens team because they just played them 2 weeks prior.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what they played, what they did. And it was very smart with the type of defensive game plan they came with. Put more speed on the field to combat Lamar Jackson and his running ability. And the Baltimore Ravens, they're a big physical team. So how do you combat power? Speed. That's what mm-hmm. you do. And that's what the Los Angeles Chargers did, and it worked out.
Well, do you think that the Patriots, I mean, so they're not a big physical team, New England. It's hard for me to even characterize this offense because it's changed so much over the course of this season. Mm-hmm. We know that, you know, it's become a much more run dominant offense than in years past. Now, some of that has to do with the absence of weapons. Right. And with Gordon out, especially some of that has to do with Rob Gronkowski is just no longer Rob Gronkowski. I think we all admit that. And Brady, he needs help in a way that he hasn't in the past. So do you feel like this Patriots offense, it's going to be led by James White and Sony Michel?
I think they're going to lean more heavily on those guys because, as you pointed out, Gronk is not the Gronk that we've been accustomed to seeing over the years. Now, I do think that this bye that they had, the couple weeks that they've had off is going to allow Gronk to kind of heal up and hopefully, he'll move a lot better, but, he just hasn't looked the same. And then that trickles down to everyone else. Chris Hogan has been MIA. Julian Edelman hasn't looked the same. And, Philip Dorsett is not really involved. And, actually, the one guy who's kind of playing pretty well is Cordell Patterson for the New England Patriots. So I figure they're going to sprinkle Cordell Patterson in as far as, you know, jack of all trades, a la, you know, Percy Harvin type of guy, and James White and Sony Michel, and just try to find the matchups. That's what New England does so well. Is they try to identify players that they feel like that we can match up really well against. So from the Chargers standpoint, what are the in-game adjustments? Because that's what it is with New England. It's a couple things. One, you're constantly playing a game of chess in, you know, when you played against the Patriots. The Patriots are going to make a move. You got to make a move. And you're constantly doing that throughout the game. That's the one thing. And then the second thing is you can't beat yourself when you play the Patriots. They thrive off that. I don't know how many times Coach Belichick used to tell us, more teams find ways to lose games than win them. And that's going to be key.
Yeah, and all those field goals that that's not going to work.
It's not going to work. Every time I see teams going to Foxborough and kick a field goal, I'm like, that's not going to work. You have to score touchdowns. You got to put pressure on New England.
And I love Philip Rivers more than members of my immediate family. But as I've been saying, he's not been great this last month. And again, like, it's not fair to judge any quarterback against the Ravens because their defense is so ridiculous. But, you know, it was impressive in some way that the Chargers were able to win without Philip Rivers having an incredible game. He did enough, right? But I've been saying over and over, Damon, that he needs to come out a lot better than he has, right? And I just don't think that what we saw from the Chargers in this Ravens game, which again, it is very much dictated by the opponent and how good their defense is, that's not going to work against New England. Now, New England, their defense is very different from Baltimore, okay? They basically have one pass rusher. That's Trey Flowers. If you neutralize Trey Flowers, you're fine. Basically, in my opinion, like that's it. Now, New England's really interesting on defense, Damian, because their secondary is much better, than their front seven. Gilmore, phenomenal. One of the best cornerbacks in the NFL. We haven't talked enough about how good he's been this season, but same with the McCourties, that Jackson corner they've got is really, really good. So, you know, I think Rivers will have the time, but he can't throw those terrible occasional Philip Rivers interceptions.
Yeah, you can't throw those, what I call those YOLO passes, YOLO interceptions, where you're just throwing it up and hoping your guy makes a play on it, because that usually doesn't work well in New England. And you're right, New England is better on the back end of their defense than in their front four. They're one of the worst teams in the league at sacking a quarterback. Their one playmaker on defensive line is Trey Flowers. Mm-hmm. And like you say, if you neutralize Trey Flowers, they're going to have a really hard time getting after the quarterback. Philip Rivers is going to have time. The question is, the way that Bill Belichick does it is he try to make you play left-handed. So they're going to try to take away Keenan Allen and basically make Philip Rivers go to his third option. Can Philip Rivers do that time and time again? And that's going to be the real key to the game.
Options. He does have because he's just being a big Mike Williams game.
That's right.
Do you, last question about this matchup. Do you think Philip Rivers knows the term YOLO?
I think so. Yeah, I think Philip Rivers has been around enough young people to understand what YOLO is. Because he talks a lot of trash.
He knows
trash.
Bolo.
He knows Bolo. I do think he knows YOLO. He's been around enough. He's been around enough dudes in the locker room and just on the field to know what YOLO is.
I would love if he said YOLO. Like, just if there was a clip of him on the sidelines, like turning to, like, you know, Keenan Allen and going YOLO in slow motion.
I just love him talking trash, though. Gosh.
We need more. I'm purely rooting for him just for the gifts, you know, as a fellow gift god, all too well.
That's right.
All right, last game. I think a surprisingly interesting game.
Eagles at Saints.
All right, so Damian, explain Nick Foles. Go.
Wow.
Why is Nick Foles? What is Nick Foles? Who is Nick Foles? Is he God? Is he a God?
He's a demigod. He's a demigod right now. Listen, this Philadelphia team has gone from, they went from averaging 20 points a game to 27 points per game when Nick Foles took over. It's amazing. I can't point to one thing that Nick Foles has just done to, you know, for everything to the points per game to jump up like that. Obviously, Darren Sproles coming back, being healthy, helps out. The offensive line starting to play a lot better helps. The Philadelphia Eagles defensive line playing a lot better helps. But it's just, I don't know what it's something with Nick Foles and Doug Peterson and how he's running this offense. They're just, They're just clicking right now. It's hard to explain. It really is. It's
Don't
just
you feel
hard.
Like they'll play better with him too? Like that would annoy me. Two things would annoy me if I was, well, a lot would be annoying me right now if I was Carson Wentz. Okay. But who is,
the fact that that Nick Foles keeps winning. Oh, you know, he's big mad.
Oh my
he
God.
Is big
Poor
mad
guy.
Right now.
Poor guy.
That's
he has to
right.
sit on the sidelines and pretend like he's happy when they win. So a few things would annoy me if I was him. One, Alshon Jeffries just morphs into like an all, like, and like, sometimes wide receivers and quarterbacks, they just click, right? And I think Nick Foles, who does have a very YOLO style, and I think that's part of the reason, like, he's like playing his entire career with house money at this point.
That's correct.
So and the thing about Alshon Jeffries, he's so physical and powerful. Throw it up to him, man. He's going to win those, you know, those one-on-ones. And Nick Foles, he's going to throw it up. So they've got that. So that would annoy me. The fact that, oh, okay, now Golden Tate, great. Yeah, score a touchdown with Nick Foles. Cool. Very cool. So it seems like, it really does seem like those weapons play better with him. But the number one thing I think would be that the offensive line is suddenly awesome again.
That's
now,
correct.
Some of that has to do with Nick Foles and his style of play and the fact that he gets the ball out so quickly. Totally. But a lot of it has to do with them just playing incredibly well. I mean, how many sacks did Khalil Mack get in this game? Zero.
Zero.
No.
Zero. The offensive line is just, they've been playing lights out. Lights out. And like I said, Darren Sproles coming back being healthy has helped out the offense. And you made a great point about Alshon Jeffery. He's not a speed burner. He's not, you're not going to, you know, mistake him for Usain Bolt. He's not going to run by you or anything like that. But what he is he's a basketball type guy. You throw it up. And I think that's what Nick Foles does well. He just trusts his guys. And for Alshon Jeffery, he'll throw it up there and just let him, you know, high point the ball. And he's done a tremendous job of that.
Well, let's talk about the other side of the ball. So I thought the Eagles, I think as much as, you know, you talked about winning in the trenches. This is a team right now that is winning in the trenches on
yes.
both sides of the ball. But as good as this Eagles defensive line is, as much as they look like the 2018 or 17/18 defensive line, that secondary has issues.
Yes,
and we saw one of those issues horribly exposed. And of course it happened after I tweeted, well, Avante Maddox has really turned around this defense. Boom. How much are the Saints going to prey on him? And how big of a concern? Like, let's talk about this defense versus that Saints offense. What are your biggest concerns?
This Eagles defensive line is going to have to play like their hair is on fire. Literally. They're going to have their best game. Because as much as we've talked about the improvement on the defense, we're really talking about the defensive line. Because it's not really the secondary. The secondary is still a major liability, you know, whether we talk about, you know, holding and pass interference, it's just getting flat out beat. It's been a combination of all three as it relates to the Eagles secondary. So the Eagles defensive line is, you know, Fletcher Cox and, you know, Brandon Graham and Chris Long, of those boys, and Michael Bennett, they've stepped it up big time. But in order to beat New Orleans and Drew Brees down in the Superdome, it's going to take a Herculean effort. For them to man up and get the job done against that Saints offense.
If there's one thing that'll help them, I think it's that this Saints offensive line, which has been great all year, has been really banged up. So I don't know what the status is of all the players, but I was trying to track the injuries towards the end of the season, Damian, and, you know, Teron Armstead's been in and out all year. But then also, Andres Pete left the last game. Larry Warford didn't play the final game. We know Ryan Ramczyk, who's a fantastic pick for them, has been injured too. So they're not in flawless shape. And I totally agree with you that it's all on that Eagles defensive line to give them hell. Because, and we know that's always hard against Drew Brees, given how fast he gets the ball out. But there's that. And then there's the issue of the Saints offense and their composition, which is Drew Brees. So they've got an edge in quarterback. I mean, not God forbid I ever pick against Nick Foles, but By the way, I've picked against him 5 times in the playoffs, and I've been wrong every single time. So,
Mina, what is going on? What is up with that?
Did you pick him last year ever in the playoffs? Did you pick the Eagles at any point?
No. No.
Just checking.
No.
I mean, he's, you know, touched by an angel, that Nick Foles. But,
yes, he is.
But that Saints offense, after Michael Thomas, gets pretty hairy. I mean, Ginn stretches the field, but, you know, it's, you can really shut those guys down.
Yeah, listen, when you watch the Saints, in particular, their skill guys on the outside, they don't have a lot of speed burners out there. Michael Thomas, I know he's, you know, can't guard Mike, and he has unbelievable synergy with Drew Brees, but he's not a speed burner. I call him more crafty than Sutton. That's the type of receiver he is. He's a crafty receiver, runs good routes, has strong hands, but he's not going to threaten you down the field like that. The only guy over there that really does that is Ted Ginn. And I'm sure the Philadelphia Eagles are, you know, they're going to be alerted to that. So Philadelphia has an opportunity because though they just, we're not talking about the Kansas City Chiefs with, you know, Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. That's a whole, totally different animal. The Saints don't have those burners like Kansas City does.
Yeah. And on the other side of the ball as well, I think the Saints defense is similar in that, the front seven is significantly better than the secondary. Now, you know, Lattimore is Lattimore and Williams, they've got good players, but, and Eli Apple's been a lot better than there holding up the other side, although he gets targeted a lot and I'm imagining he'll be targeted a lot in this game, but they're exploitable for sure. You know, it's the run defense in New Orleans, that's all world. And well, Philadelphia, they're not really a run first offense and that's not their strength. So I actually think this is a surprisingly, like a sneaky good matchup for them. Now I'm still going with the Saints here because I wouldn't want to interrupt my record of being made to look stupid by Nick Foles. But what about you?
I'm picking the Saints in this game. I just feel like that environment down in New Orleans is crazy. It's unreal. I believe that Drew Brees and Sean Payton are undefeated in the postseason in New Orleans and for good reason. They're going to be ready to go. Sean Payton's one of the best schemers in the National Football League. And I think the magic is going to end this. I think the magic is going to end this weekend with Nick Foles. I do.
That's good. Somebody save that drop, please, for when Nick Foles leads yet another upset. If this was in Philadelphia, let me just ask one more question. If this was in Philadelphia, would you pick the Eagles?
If this was, say it again, if this was what now?
If it was in Philadelphia, would you pick the Eagles?
I actually think I would.
Yeah.
I think I would. If this game was in Philadelphia, I think I would go with the Eagles.
I might as well.
Yeah.
I might as well. All right. Last segment, as always.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
All right, Damien. I got 5 questions for you. The 5th is from my dog, Lenny. As always, I will honor his not as always. So for those listening, last week, why do I say for those who are listening? Obviously, you're listening. Like, what a redundant thing for me. Like, I hope you're still listening. Otherwise, you're just playing this ambiently, which is not the best ambient thing to have in the background. But that said, okay, so last week, my dog gets the 5th question. I felt like I had humiliated myself too much by reading in his voice, but then I did it in my own voice, and a lot of people complained. They said, bring back Lenny's voice, so I'm going to bring back Lenny's voice for you, Damien. But the question is from him. It's not from me, so
okay.
We'll get to that. First 4 questions are from me. Number 1, in my bio on Twitter, I say, hater of the goal line fade. I was wondering, what's your least favorite play in football?
Least favorite play.
Like when coaches call it, you're like, why?
I would say like a fullback dive. Like why? why ever give the ball to the fullback? I'm like, that is such a waste. I understand that you got to throw him a bone, but why?
You got to throw them a bone.
Yeah, you got to throw him a bone.
Are you team, like, fullback shouldn't be in the Pro Bowl?
No, I'm all for fullbacks being in Pro Bowl because, I mean, when you got to slam your head up against these linebackers play after play, no, those guys deserve to be in a Pro Bowl. If you're good and to be able to pull that off, yeah, I'm giving you some love on that.
All right, next question. I can't remember who it was. I think it was Greg Hanselis, Chris Wessling, someone I was friends with, was tweeting about – oh, no, it was Rich Eisen. That's it. He was talking about the ongoing debate that's shaking the nation, should you recline on airplanes? Now, there's a right answer to this, but I'm going to give you the opportunity to give me your answer, which is, do you think people should recline on flights?
Absolutely, I'm reclining.
No.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Listen. I gotta be able to move back this torso. Okay, there's no
but
way
then
I'm
the
just going
to sit.
The people
don't
in front
of you make you uncomfortable when they recline onto you.
Well, most of the time I'm in first class, Mina. So I got leg room. See, I'm a bigger guy, I know it's a weird flex, but you know, I'm a bigger guy, so I can't, I gotta make sure I got the proper leg space. So I need to be able to recline. Because I like to sleep on the plane. If I'm sitting upright, I'm not comfortable enough to sleep on the plane.
That's fair. But that's why my theory and throw first class out the window, because obviously the physics are different up there, Mr. Fancy Pants. But my theory is that you can recline between 9 p.m. and 9 a.m. That's my, or on flights longer than 4 hours. But the thing about the tall guy thing is I have equal parts tall guys saying, yes, I have to be able to recline because I'm tall. But then there are tall guys saying, I hate reclining because I'm tall and the people in front of me recline. It's like a trap. There's
really?
No right answer.
Hmm. Have you ever reclined?
Oh, I have reclined, and only because the person in front of me reclined. See, that's what I mean. It's like a human centipede. It's not a human. Wow, that was a really bad comparison. We're all forming a human centipede of shame. Only instead of pooping into each other's mouths, we are reclining.
Got it. Makes sense.
Aren't you glad you did this podcast? Okay, so a lot of coaching hires being announced today. A lot of quarterback type guys, and I've got questions and issues, and that's a whole separate conversation. But I wanted to ask you, like, on a more prescriptive note, guy who played, had a bunch of coaches. What do you think is the most underrated quality for a head coach that people don't talk about enough?
I think a coach that can relate to you on a personal level. And when I was in New England, people, you know, when I tell people that Coach Belichick had, you know, he was personable, people just look at me as just like, dude, why are you lying? You caping for Coach Belichick right now. I'm like, no, I'm like, this dude, I'm like, y'all don't understand. This dude is not who you think he is just from watching press conferences. He's not that type of guy. He's a different dude. I'm not saying he's a player's coach, but he has an other side to you that will make you, that would surprise a lot of people out there.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So he's not a player's coach, but he talks to you like a human being. Would that be kind of a, like?
Yeah. And he has a sense of humor.
Really?
He does. A very underrated sense of humor.
Hmm.
You're not buying it. You're not buying it at all.
I'm trying to imagine him making a joke, and I can't.
Yeah, but it's like he'll make a joke, but it's like a straight face, and it's hilarious. It's absolutely
okay.
Yeah.
So he's like dry.
He's dry.
Like,
yes.
Kinda.
Yeah.
All right. How do you think he would react? How Bill Belichick would react to being asked like a question in a dog's voice?
Oh, I can only, he would just give you this look like, Mina, like, you know, what the hell? Like, he would just like look at you crazy, like, what are we doing here? Like, what are we doing? He would be really annoyed.
That's a really good question.
Yeah.
That's a completely irrational reaction. Yeah, we're still doing it. Okay, question number four. What is the most embarrassing TV show that you like?
Ooh. Wow. The most embarrassing.
Mine's The Bachelor.
Yours is The Bachelor?
I watch The Bachelor, yeah.
That's a good one. Because there's a couple of them that come to mind.
Just to be honest.
Mine is The Crown?
The Crown isn't embarrassing. That's like prestigious television.
Yeah, it's like, I think The Crown. I would say The Crown might be the one. Because they don't, when I say that, people look at me like, dude, you watch that? And I'm like, that. Yeah.
Did you watch it with Tiffany sitting on your lap?
Absolutely. My dog sits there. We ride together. I take her to the store, do all types of things. Yeah. We watch TV together.
I need more pictures of you with Tiffany. Okay. I'm never going to let Tiffany go. Well, speaking of, okay, so last question's from Lenny. Like I said, I have no accountability for anything he says. I'll be reading it in his voice. I know you're making the Bill Belichick reaction face at the other end of the line here, and I'm shameless, so. Okay. Damien! How you doing? You good? You still with us?
I'm good.
Damon, two-part question. Baker Mayfield is my favorite quarterback. Why do you hate him? And can you hook it up with Tiffany? Wow,
listen,
Lenny.
Lenny.
Who said you got two questions?
I know.
What the
like
hell?
You are really asking a lot, Lenny. Really. Listen, I was... People get this twisted about myself and
dogs.
Baker Mayfield. These dogs say the darndest things. They get this whole thing with Baker Mayfield and myself twisted. I have no problem with Baker Mayfield. None. Zero. I have no problem. It's with his fanboys that just always come in. It's like, guys, chill out, okay? You're finally getting a little bit of success, and you're letting it get to your head. You don't know how to handle success. And that's really been my whole problem with Baker and his boys. It's like, y'all need to chill out. When y'all actually win something, then you can start puffing your chest out a little bit, okay?
Woo. Woo.
Yeah.
It was a two-part question. I don't know if you got the second part.
Yeah. No, I'm very protective of my dog. Like Tiffany, like that's my daughter right there. Like I'm very protective of her. So
well, Lenny's not good enough for Tiffany.
I'm not saying. Listen, any dog that rolls with Mina is highly regarded. I'm just saying I'm very protective of my daughter.
All right. Well, you know, like you can slip the digits to Lenny afterwards.
You know what? Maybe you just have Lenny slide into her DMs. How about that?
Damien, I love it when you slide into my DMs.
Yes.
To be on my podcast. And I love your gifts. I love your analysis. Thank you so much for coming on. Hopefully, next time we can get an appearance from Tiffany as well.
We will definitely work on that. Appreciate you having me.